So hello everyone, my name is Ronghui Gu from Yale University, and today I'm going to present our recent work on CertiCos, an extensible architecture for building certified concurrent OS kernels. So OS kernels is running everywhere, and any single error inside the kernel might cause you a blue screen or even a disaster. And we want to prove that our kernel is free of errors. As claimed by the SEL4 paper, that complete formal verification is the only known way to guarantee that a system is free of programming errors. Recent efforts have already shown that it's feasible to verify large and complex systems. We have verified sequential kernels, we have verified software stacks, as well as verified sequential file systems. These works are great, but none of them can deal with the shared memory concurrency issue. So let's look at how they talk about this issue. So as pointed out by the SEL4, proofs about concurrent programs are hard, much harder than proofs about sequential programs. Everyone knows this problem is hard, but why it is so hard? So the FSCQ paper makes this statement that the multiprocessor support may require global changes. In other words, in front of this multiprocessor issue, our previous experience and even our best weapons might simply lose its power. However, multiprocessor is not the only concurrency inside the kernel. We also have multi-thread concurrency and I/O concurrency. When these things mix together, it's kind of like a Pandora's box that contains all the evils in the world. And you can't simply lock this box with a big lock for the performance concern. You want to use fine-grained locks. But again, fine-grained locks is really hard to verify. So what's more, when we want to verify a concurrent OS kernel, what we need to prove? So first, we need to prove the functional correctness. And other than that, we also need to show in the liveness that means that all the system calls will eventually return. So the liveness proof is pretty hard, especially at the scale of this concurrent OS kernel. What's more, this concurrent OS kernel is always a mix of different modules implemented at different languages, like C and assembly. And we also need to make sure that this compilation phase is correct, and the compiled code can be linked with the handwritten assembly without any error. So even if we can solve all these issues, what the cost will be like? So now here comes our CertiCos architecture that solves all these challenges. So using CertiCos, we build MC2, which is the first formally verified concurrent OS kernel, and it can support fine-grained locks. And we prove both the functional correctness and the liveness. And the main techniques we use is what we call certified concurrent layers. And it allows us to reuse the techniques that we developed for the sequential program verification in the past decades. And it can handle all three different kinds of concurrency, as I mentioned before. So we use this layers and prove 6,100 lines of C plus 400 lines of assembly. And we also introduce a certified thread-safe compiler named the CompsetX that can make sure that this compilation phase and the linking phase are totally correct. So we didn't use model checking, we didn't use SMT solver. So all the proofs are done inside the calc, which is machine checkable. So what's more, you can extract the code from this machine checkable certificate. And this code is runnable on the raw x86 hardware, multi-core hardware. So that is why we use the term certified instead of this verified. So the sequential kernel is verified within 1 person year, and we make some a bunch of extensions. Each of them take a couple months. And the whole concurrency support only took 2 person year to develop. So these are the new technologies that we introduced to solve this concurrency issue. So the first is the certified concurrent layers, and the doing concurrent program reasoning using logical log, hardware scheduler, and the environment context, and the new push-pull memory model, as well as the multi-core machine lifting. We'll cover all these points one by one. So First is the certified layers. Before we jump into the concurrent world, let's see what are the certified layers in the sequential setting. So the sequential layer is a bunch of certified objects, which you can view them as a specification to the modules that you have already verified or you want to totally trust. Each object contains two parts. The first part is the abstract state, which you can view as the abstract version of the inner state of each object. And the second part is the primitives, which is a functional specification of all the object's methods. So suppose there is a piece of code that relies on some certified objects, and it attaches some part of memory, as shown on the slide. And then we can verify this piece of code on top of this layer, and introduce a higher layer which contains this new object, whose primitive is a specification of the code we have just verified, and its abstract state is the abstract version of that piece of memory the code touches. And the way we build these layers is what we call is through the simulation proof. So which can be shown by this diagram, that starting from two related states, if the specification take one step, then the implementation can take multiple steps, and the related and the result states can also be related together. So now we will show how to use this technology to verify a sequential kernel based on some sequential machine model. So the first step is to decompose the kernel into multiple modules, and then starting from the bottom one, which is the memory measurement, we will further decompose it into small pieces and verify them as its proper layer. After that, we can link the whole module together. And we can keep going and verify the rest of the kernel. And the result is a fully verified sequential kernel. And we aggressively apply this technology and build 37 layers. And the top one is the system calls that expose it to the user level. The entire thing took less than 1% year, which is really hard to believe. So now our technology is also can be easily extended. So suppose we want to verify some virtual machine management, and you can first introduce the hardware virtualization support to the bottom layer and pass through these features until the top of the process management. And then you can verify the virtual machine on top of it, and the result is a verified hypervisor. So we believe that this extensibility is the key to support concurrency. So we first introduce this multi-core model that models the raw x86 multi-core hardware. And on top of it, we lift it into a machine model called a CPU local machine, which can replace the previous sequential machine model and it can be closely linked to the existing layers we have already built. And on top of it, we verify a spin lock module and provide the protection to the shared objects for the higher layers. And on top of the thread management, we introduced this thread local machine using the similar trick as we did for the multi-core setting. And then we verify the rest of the MC2 kernel on top of it. So finally, we get back to the concurrent world. So let's look at what are these certified concurrent layers look like. So we still have this yellow box, which are, but we have a new name that is a local object. It can be built in a similar way as we build the sequential certified objects. So beside it, we also introduced two new components. The first one is what we call the logical lock, which contains a sequence of events, and it's purely logical, will not introduce any performance overhead. The second component is the atomic objects, which will be shared among all the CPUs. And all these methods will generate one event, and it will take it in, the effects will take into place when this event be appended to the end of the logical log. So now let's see if we want to share some local objects to other CPUs. So we can simply protect this object with the existing atomic objects like logs or conditional variables, and then prove that it satisfies some high-level atomic interface and introduce it into the higher layer. Since we protect the whole kernel at the level of object, we call it fine-grained logs. So now I will go deep into the details of all the components in our architecture. So the starting point is this raw x86 multi-core model. So we assume the sequential consistency, and this model allows arbitrary interleaving. as shown by this execution example. So at each step, you can see that it chooses one CPU to execute, and all the atomic operation will generate the events to the logical log. So this blue box is the shared memory access without the synchronization. So everything looks fine, except that it's non-deterministic. We don't want to reasoning about non-determinism because it's too hard. So how to solve this issue? So let's look at this example again. And this is the most important part of this talk, so you should not miss it. So at the beginning, the CPU 0 has a turn to execute, and it generates one event. And then it switched to the CPU 1, and keep on the CPU 1 and generate one event, and finally get back to the CPU 0. So if there exists an oracle that gives this list of integers to us and tells us what is the next CPU to execute, then our life will be much easier, and the machine will become totally deterministic. So this oracle is what we call the hardware scheduler. And you can view it as a sequence of integers, and we insert this black triangle in front of each step, and at this, we call it a switch point. And at each switch point, it will curate this hardware scheduler to see what is the next CPU to execute. So for one particular execution, there is a corresponding hardware scheduler. And this hardware scheduler is purely logical, of course. And all the switch events will also be stored in the logical log. So we use it to reduce the non-determinism inside the multi-core machine model. But you may think that this hardware scheduler is too weak because it's bounded to one particular execution. But if you can prove that your program is correct for all possible this logical scheduler, then it becomes powerful. So the next step is what we call the push-pull memory model. So this is used to restrict the shared memory access. So in this model, we do not allow each CPU to directly access the shared memory. Instead, we will introduce a local copy for each piece of shared memory for each CPU. And before the memory access, you have to invoke this pull operation, which will copy the memory contents from the shared memory to the local copy. And then you can access this part of memory as if it's private and local to your own CPU. And if there is another CPU that's trying to pull the same piece of memory at the same time, there will be an error. And later we'll show that how to present this kind of errors and how to prove that the kernel is free of this kind of errors later. And let's assume that nothing is going wrong, and all the shared memory access are finished, and then it will push the memory contents back from the local copy to the shared memory. So then we approve the machine refinement to this machine model with local copy. And the next step is what we call the per CPU machine. So now if you only focus on the CPU 0, and what you can observe from the outside world, we can thanks to this push and pull memory model, you can see that at the first switch point, it can observe this switch event. And at the second switch point, it can observe not only the switch events, but also the events generated by all other CPUs, like the CPU 1. So now we enrich our hardware scheduler to contain not only the switch events, but also the events generated by other CPUs. So it will serve as a specification to the outside world, to the outside, to the context thread or context CPUs. So with the help of it, we can get a per CPU machine. However, there are still some unnecessary interleaving on this machine. We want to remove it. Thanks to the push-pull model again, we can shuffle all the switch points in front of the shared memory access and the private memory access in front of the next atomic operation. And then we can merge all the adjacent switch points together. So the result is a CPU local machine, which looks pretty similar to the sequential one, except this two components. One is the atomic operation with switch event, with switch point, and the other is a logical log. So now we'll show how to verify a spin lock module on top of this CPU local machine. So let's first look at the specification of a acquire lock. So suppose there's a piece of shared memory that is protected by this acquire lock. Then if this local copy, the corresponding local copy, is invalid, meaning that the current CPU didn't hold the lock, then the specification guarantees that the acquire lock will successfully and safely pull the memory contents from the shared part to this local copy. And this pull procedure will eventually return. So this specification guarantees both mutual exclusion and the liveness properties. And we will see how we can verify the ticket lock implementation satisfy this specification. So this is a pretty standard ticket lock implementation. And at the beginning of this function, it will fetch the ticket number and increase it by one, which will generate one event. This atomic operation is implemented by the atomic x86 instruction. And then it will go into this while loop and check the now serving ticket. Until the now serving ticket is equal to your local one, it will jump out of the loop and call the final pull operation. So the mutual exclusion proof is the key is to show that this pull operation is safe to execute at this point. And the main challenging part is to show that the fetch and increase events always returns a unique local ticket for all the CPUs that's spinning on the same lock at the same time. And when we do this proof, we have to assume that the total number of CPUs is less than the maximum unsigned integer, because if because there might be a potential integer overflow. Actually, I didn't aware of this restriction before I verified ticket lock. And then the liveness proof can be converted into the proof to show that all the get now events generated by the CPU is bounded. So this proof also relies on that the CPU number is bounded. And we have a fair hardware scheduler. And also we need to prove that all the lock holders will eventually release the lock. So if we prove these two steps, we can show that the acquire lock satisfies this atomic interface and will generate one acquire lock event, which happens at the point that this pool event's been generated at the lower level. And with the help of this spin lock, we can build some shared library, like a shared queue. So this is a local queue object that we have built in the sequential setting, and it will append one event to the end of the logical log, to the end of the local memory. And if we want to share this among all the CPUs, we have to protect it with the spin lock, and it first acquire the lock, pull the memory, the queue from the shared memory to this local copy, and then the release lock, and do the operation over the local copy, and the release lock will push this queue back to the shared memory. So in total, it forms an atomic interface which will directly operate on this shared memory. So with the help of it, we can verify that the thread scheduler primitive with this atomic enqueue and the dequeue. And the one point I want to emphasize is this context switch code, which doesn't satisfy the C convention and has to be verified at the assembly level. And then we get to this atomic interface for the hardware software scheduler, which can be dealing with similarly as a multi-core setting and introduce this thread local machine model. On top of it, we verify the conditional variable and the IPC. So finally, we get into the evaluation part. So this is the proof efforts for the concurrency extension. You can see that the specification and the machine model is pretty small, and the intermediate spec consists of about 40,000 lines of calc definition, and the proof consists of about 50,000 lines of calc proof. And this is the performance. We compare MC2 with KVM, and we will only focus on the first three data, that is compare running Linux on top of MC2 and running Linux on top of KVM. The baseline is running Linux directly on top of the bare metal. You can see that our performance is pretty comparable with KVM, which is a commercial hypervisor. So definitely, we have some limitations. We rely on the bootloader assembler and the machine model. We also assume the sequential consistency, and also file system and the network stack are in the future work. So this is our architecture and our contributions and all our key weapons. And we verify the first concurrent OS kernel. We first verify concurrent OS kernel. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions. Are there patterns of concurrent accesses that would cause you difficulty with this approach of verification and therefore you have to avoid?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Are there patterns of concurrent accesses, right, that would cause difficulty?
You mean the sequential consistency push-pull model will cause any trouble to support more features, or it's hard to, whether it's hard to prove or not?
Well, both of them, right? I mean, you co-designed the kernel together with the verification. And my question is, right, how to what extent did you have to restrict yourself in the types of concurrency that you used in order to allow the verification?
Yes. So if you go deep into this push-pull model, you can find that if there is error in this, which means that there is a data risk inside the kernel. So we feel like the data risk inside the kernel is dangerous. We want to rule it out in our kernel at least. So if this is the case, there are a bunch of recent works talking about the TSO memory models that you can link with our underlying memory model and to make it more realistic. So from my point of view, this push-pull model simplified the reasoning for most of the concurrent programs. So that's my opinion.
Thank you. We have a question here. Several.
Hey, thanks for the talk. Super interesting. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on the sort of broader implications for hardware designers or for people building on top of this kernel. Mm. In particular, you know, the verification is with respect to some specification.
Yes.
So, what do you think about how that specification might affect or change things for people building around this software?
You mean,
as opposed to, say, like documentation, which functions as a form of specification?
Yes, it's a good question. That is how the verification thing can change, let's say, the development and maybe help them to do documentation.
Sure, yeah. I'm just curious what you see as the implications beyond just giving a stamp of approval, this is verified.
Yeah, okay. So the first of all, we want to say that our key idea is to build layers. And we think that it might affect the way that you design OS kernels at the first place. That is, instead of writing the let's say the documentation for the whole kernel, you can write them layer by layer. And actually, we also developed some OS courses based on this layer approach at Yale, and it give us a greater feedback that the students can finally learn what is the inner architecture inside the kernel. It's not magical anymore. So I think these are the good impacts that we can, our verification method can make to the development and even the industry.
Okay, one more question.
James Gleason, University of Toronto. I was just curious, you have a limited threading model at the moment, so you can only yield. Do you think you could be able to provide a preemption? Perhaps maybe not preempting at any point in kernel execution, but perhaps limiting it to certain key points in execution.
Yeah, so it's a good question. So first of all, our interleaving does not limit it to any key points. So at the bottom layer allow arbitrary interleaving, but we show this machine lifting to a level that will restrict these points, and we show that if your program is safe on this limited machine, it is still safe on this hardware. So this is one point. The second point is our current kernel does not allow preemption inside the kernel. That is true. And we see no fundamental challenges to incorporate this machine lifting to support it. And actually, there are a bunch of written work published in CAV this year about how to verify the primitive scheduling inside the MuCAUS 3 kernel. So I think we can adapt those in our future work.